Throughout history, there have been some men and women identified for their eminent doctrine and remarkable holiness of life, whom the Church has declared doctors. They fulfill what we hear in Psalm 15. Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy mountain? Whoever walks without blame, doing what is right, speaking truth from the heart, who does not slander with his tongue, does no harm to a friend, never defames a neighbor, who disdains the wicked, but honors those who fear the Lord, who keeps an oath despite the cost, lends no money at interest, accepts no bribe against the innocent. Whoever acts like this shall never be shaken. Let us now place ourselves before the doctors of the Church to learn from their lives and their teaching in this program, Speaking Truth from the Heart. My name is Father Rick Martinetti. I'm a Franciscan priest, reading to you from one of the works of a great doctor of the Church, St. Bonaventure of Bagnoregio, who wrote the life story of St. Francis of Assisi. We're in chapter 10 right now of Bonaventure's retelling of the life of Francis, and this chapter is brief, yet it's dedicated to the prayer life of St. Francis. Bonaventure has been looking at the miracles that God worked through St. Francis, how he attracted a group of young men and young women to do what he was doing, to go out and serve the poor and to leave their wealth. And now we come to really kind of the core of who Francis is. He was who he was because of his prayer life, because of his deep love for Jesus Christ. So let's look at chapter 10 now, and maybe try to pick up some of the secrets to help our own prayer life and our own relationship with Jesus Christ to deepen. Francis, the servant of Christ, aware that while in the body he was away from the Lord, became totally unaware of earthly desires through love of Christ, and strove to keep his spirit present to God by praying without ceasing, lest he be without the consolation of the beloved. Prayer was a comfort for this contemplative. Even now, it was as if he were a citizen with the angels in the heavenly mansions. As he sought with burning desire the beloved from whom only the wall of the flesh separated him, distrusting his own effort and trusting divine providence, prayer was a fortress to this worker. For in everything he did, he cast his cares completely upon the Lord through his perseverance. He firmly claimed that the grace of prayer must be desired above all else by a religious, believing that without it no one could prosper in God's service. He used whatever means he could to arouse his brothers to be zealous in prayer. For whether walking or sitting, inside or outside, working or resting, he was so focused on prayer that he seemed to have dedicated to it not only whatever was in his heart and body, but also all his effort and time. He usually neglected no visitation of the Spirit. Whenever it was offered, he would follow it. And for as long as the Lord granted, he enjoyed the sweetness that God offered. When he was occupied with travel and felt the breathing of the Divine Spirit, while his companions went on ahead, he would stop in his tracks as he turned a new inspiration into something fruitful. He did not receive grace in vain. Many times he was suspended in such an excess of contemplation that he was carried away above himself, and experiencing that which is beyond human understanding, he was aware of what went on about him. So Bonaventure is just showing us how Francis was praying at all times, praying while he traveled, praying while he was alone, praying while he was with his brothers. His heart was raised up to Jesus Christ, and he looked at the world through the lens of Jesus Christ. Each moment was an opportunity to meet Jesus, whether it was in the poor, in his brothers, or in his own heart. Bonaventure likes to highlight that Francis was taken out of himself in kind of a mystical ecstasy, and yet he could still fully function in the world. And that, of course, is the mark of the true saint, that their prayer life leads them to greater love for neighbor. It doesn't take them out of the world, but it leads them to serve the world with a greater joy and enthusiasm. Let's continue. One time, when Francis was traveling through Borgo San Sepolcro, a heavily populated town, and was riding on a donkey because of physical weakness, crowds rushed to meet him out of great devotion. He was touched by them, pulled and shoved by them, yet he seemed not to feel any of this, and as if he were a lifeless corpse, did not notice what was going on around him. Long after he had passed the town and left the crowds, he came to a dwelling of many people with leprosy. And this contemplator of heaven, as if returning from somewhere else, anxiously asked when they would be reaching Borgo. His mind was so fixed on heavenly splendors that he was almost unaware of the differences of place, time, and people that he passed. This happened to him often and was confirmed by the repeated experience of his companions. And because he had learned in prayer that the presence of the Holy Spirit for which he longed was offered more intimately to those who invoke him, the more it found them far from the noise of worldly affairs. Therefore, seeking out solitary places, Francis used to go to deserted and abandoned churches to pray at night. There he often endured struggles with temptation and devils who would assault him, trying to distract him from his commitment to prayer. But armed with heavenly weapons, the more vehemently he was attacked by the enemy, the more courageous he became in practicing virtue and the more fervent in prayer, saying confidently to Christ, "Under the shadow of your wings, protect me from the face of the wicked who have attacked me." To the devils, he said, "Do whatever you want with me, you malicious and deceitful spirits, for you cannot do anything unless the heavenly hand relaxes its hold on you, and I am ready to endure with delight whatever comes." The demons often retreated confused, not tolerating such firmness of mind and heart. Okay, a couple little stories there. Bonaventure highlighting that Francis, whether he was with the average person or was with people covered in leprosy, either way, he was praying. It seemed to make no difference to him what group he was with. And then Bonaventure highlights the attacks that come in prayer. And we know we can sometimes be frightened when we hear that there is something going on in the spiritual world, that there are attacks from the evil one. But we ourselves are attacked whenever we go off to prayer. We're attacked by distractions. We're attacked by just a list of things that needs to get done that makes us want to hurry through our prayer and get out of there as soon as we can. The attacks don't have to be a physical manifestation of a demon like some of the saints and mystics may have faced. Attacks just come in the form of temptation, anything that encourages us to abandon our prayer. Francis teaches us what to do. Turn to Jesus. Turn to Jesus in these moments and say confidently with Christ that you are my protector. You are my Lord. Reflect more on the love of God than on ourselves, and we will be able to persevere in prayer. Fall in love with Jesus, who we meet in prayer, and we will never want to leave. Let's continue with the story. When Francis was alone and at peace, the man of God would fill the forest with groans and water the places with tears, strike his breast with his hand, and, as if finding a more secret hiding place, would converse with the Lord within himself. There he entreated the Father. There he conversed with his friend. There too the brothers, who were devoutly observing him, heard him on several occasions cry out to the Lord, imploring the divine mercy for all sinners. He would meditate on the Lord's passion, often to the point of tears, as if it were before him. He was seen praying at night at times, with his hands outstretched in the form of a cross, his whole body lifted up from the ground and surrounded by a sort of shining cloud, so that the illumination around his body was a witness to the wonderful light that shone within his soul. There too, as is proven by certain evidence, the unknown and hidden secrets of divine wisdom were given to him, opened up to him. Although he never spoke of them outside, except when the love of Christ urged him and the good of his neighbor demanded it. For he used to say, "It happens that one loses something priceless for the sake of a small reward and easily provokes the giver not to give again when one shares the divine secrets without discretion." When Francis returned from his private prayers, in which he was more or less changed into a different man, he tried his best to join the others, lest what he might show outwardly, the breeze of favor, would deprive him of a reward inwardly. When he was suddenly overcome in public by a visitation of the Lord, he would always place something between himself and the bystanders, so that he would not cheapen the sight of the bridegroom's intimate touch. When he prayed with the brothers, he completely avoided groans and hard breathing or external movement, either because he loved to keep secrecy the things of the Lord, or because he had withdrawn into his interior and was totally lifted up into God. Often he would say to those close to him, "When a servant of God is praying and is visited by the divine, he must say, 'Lord, you have sent this consolation from heaven to me, an unworthy sinner. I entrust it back to you for your keeping, because I feel I would be a thief otherwise and be stealing your treasure.'" When he returned from his prayer, he should appear as a poor man and a sinner, as if he had not obtained any new grace. It's a very interesting interpretation based on the brothers that were around St. Francis. Bonaventure is trying to get to what was going on in this man's heart. We know he had a deep and passionate love for Jesus. We know he had experiences of feeling the presence of Christ. And yet he always tried to remain just one of the brothers. He didn't want to show off. He didn't want to brag about any graces he was receiving in prayer. Francis knew that there was such a thing as spiritual jealousy, and sometimes we can share too much of what we receive from the Lord and tempt others to jealousy. He let the Lord go first. He shared what the Lord wanted him to share, no more or no less. If it helped another person's soul, Francis would share the fruits of his own prayer life. And if not, he would keep it secret and be content to just be in this union with his beloved Jesus. Let's continue the story. Once when the man of God was praying in the place of the Portiuncula, the bishop of Assisi happened to come to him, as he often did. As soon as he entered the place, he went more abruptly than he should have to the cell where Francis was praying, knocked on the door, and was about to enter when he stuck his head inside and saw the saint praying. Suddenly, struck with trembling, the bishop froze and seemed to have lost his voice. By the divine will, he was quickly pushed outside and taken aback. Stunned, the bishop went to the brothers, and when God had restored his speech, at the first word he confessed his fault as best he could for intruding on the prayer of this holy man. Another time, the abbot of the monastery of San Giustino in the Diocese of Perugia happened to meet Francis, Christ's servant. When he saw him, the devout abbot quickly dismounted from his horse to show reverence to the man of God and to converse with him a bit about the salvation of his soul. Finally, after a pleasant conversation, the abbot, as he left, humbly asked Francis to pray for him. The dear man of God replied, I will willingly pray. When the abbot had ridden away a short distance, faithful Francis said to his companion, "Wait a moment, brother, because I want to pay the debt I promised." He stopped and he prayed. As he prayed, suddenly the abbot felt in spirit an unusual warmth and sweetness like nothing he felt before, and wrapped in ecstasy, he totally was taken up into God. This lasted for only a short time, and then he returned to his senses and realized it was the power of St. Francis's prayer. From that time on, he always burned with ever greater love for the Franciscan order and told many about this miraculous event. Two wonderful stories that Bonaventure shares there about the Bishop of Assisi and about the abbot of the monastery in Perugia. Two very holy men of God, two men both intrigued by St. Francis. One comes to him and is so moved by Francis in prayer that it's as if a force takes him back. He knows in his heart he can't interrupt this holy man's prayer. What a beautiful moment we have there. And then we see how Francis was quick to pay those debts. I mean, oftentimes we can say to someone, "I will pray for you, I'll pray for you," and maybe never get around to praying for them. Francis knew that that could happen in human weakness, and so he just stopped what he was doing. "Wait a minute, brother," he says, "I want to pay the debt I promised." He stops right there on the road as they're traveling, and he prays for the abbot as he promised. And of course, God just confirms this whole event for us by allowing the abbot to feel the effects of Francis's prayer and to know that he is a holy man of God. Bonaventure writes, "Francis always prayed the canonical hours, the divine office, with great reverence and devotion. Although often he was suffering from disease of the eyes or the stomach, the spleen, and the liver, he nevertheless did not want to lean against a wall or a partition while he was chanting the Psalms. He always fulfilled the hours standing up straight and without a hood, without letting his eyes wander about, and without dropping the syllables. If he were on a journey, he would stop at the right time and never omitted this reverent and holy practice, even if it was raining or snowing. For he would say, 'If the body calmly eats its food, which along with itself will be food for worms, should not the soul receive the food of life in great peace and tranquility?' He also thought that he had committed an offense if, while he was at prayer, he let his mind go off to empty wanderings. When such a thing would happen, he did not fail to confess it immediately and make amends. He had made such a habit of this carefulness that he was rarely bothered by what he called flies or distractions of the mind. One Lent, Francis had been making a small vase to occupy any spare time, so that it would not be wasted in any way. When he was praying his liturgy, it came to his mind, and the vase distracted him. Moved by fervor of spirit, Francis went to the vase and smashed it, threw it in the fire, saying, 'I will sacrifice it to the Lord, whose sacrifice it had interrupted.' He used to say the Psalms with such attention of mind and spirit as if he had God present before his eyes. When the Lord's name occurred in the Psalms, he seemed to lick his lips because of its sweetness. He wanted to honor with special reverence the Lord's name, not only when thought, but also when spoken and written. He once persuaded the brothers to gather all pieces of paper wherever they were found and to place them in a clean place so that if the sacred name happened to be written there, it would not be trodden underfoot. When he pronounced or heard the name Jesus, he was filled with an inner joy and seemed completely changed exteriorly, as if some honey-sweet flavor had transformed his taste, or some harmonious sound had transformed his hearing. Just to comment a little bit on these few moments that Bonaventure records in the life of Francis, it's a very interesting story. He's making a vase. He's got some free time, and it's good to be creative. It's good to use our free time to make something, and this is a good project. But then Francis finds that in prayer, he's distracted. He keeps thinking about the vase. He's praying with words, but his mind is elsewhere. He leaves his prayer experience, and he goes over and he smashes the vase. Just to put it in perspective. Now, Francis is a saint, and he's very extreme. He knows at this point that all eyes are on him. He wants to be a good witness to his brothers, and he cares only about loving Jesus. So he smashes this distraction so that he can focus more on the Lord. Now, this does not call us to go out and do the same. We don't have to smash anything we're working on. We don't have to refrain from creative projects. But it does beg the bigger question, what is the vase in our lives that is keeping us from God? That could be anything. That could be our pride. That could be our relationships with others. That could be our own way of doing something, or it could be a material good. It could be a cell phone or a computer that we spend too much time with and refuse to give that time to the Lord. This story, I think, calls each of us to say, what is the vase in my life that is distracting me from giving my heart to God? And could I possibly smash that? Could I possibly turn my back on it so that I can give more of my heart to the Lord? I think that's a way to interpret these stories of Francis and take them a little deeper so that they mean something to us, to apply them to our own journey with the Lord.
Quod verbis accelibus nativa mens quod exhibent, eos vidis tuos gratiae, novoritore gravui.
Let's finish now. Chapter 10, and conclude our look at Francis's prayer life. It happened 3 years prior to his death that Francis decided to celebrate at the town of Greccio the memory of the birth of the child Jesus with the greatest possible solemnity in order to arouse devotion. So that this would not be considered a type of novelty, he petitioned for and obtained permission from the Holy Father. He had a manger prepared, hay carried in, and an ox and a donkey led to the spot. The brothers are summoned, the people arrive, the forest amplifies with their cries, and that venerable night is rendered brilliant and solemn by a multitude of bright lights and by resonant and harmonious hymns of praise. The man of God stood before the manger filled with piety, bathed in tears and overcome with joy. A solemn mass was celebrated over the manger with Francis, who was a deacon, chanting the Holy Gospel. Then Francis preached to the people standing around him about the birth of the poor king, whom, whenever he means to call him, he called in his tender love the Babe of Bethlehem. There was a certain virtuous and truthful knight, a man named John of Greccio, who had abandoned worldly military activity out of love of Christ and had become an intimate friend of the man of God. He claimed at that moment that he saw a beautiful little child asleep in the manger, whom the blessed Father Francis embraced in both of his arms and seemed to wake as if from sleep. Not only did the holiness of this witness make him credible, the vision of this devout knight also expressed the truth of this moment. For Francis's example, when considered by the world, was capable of arousing the hearts of those who were sluggish in the faith to love Jesus Christ. The hay from the crib was kept by the people and miraculously cured the sick and drove away different kinds of pestilence. Thus God glorified his servant Francis in every way and demonstrated the efficacy of his holy prayer by the evident signs of wonderful miracles. So we just conclude our look at Francis's prayer life by Bonaventure's story of this great moment of Francis celebrating Christmas, celebrating the Nativity, and wanting it to come alive for the people. So he transforms Greccio into another Bethlehem. He brings in hay, he brings in animals. He doesn't just want to read about the story of Jesus, he wants to experience it, the sights and the smells and the sounds that would have been there in the stable in Bethlehem. And the Lord rewards Francis by being present in this prayer experience in a powerful way. And one man even witnesses Francis lift up baby Jesus and hold him in his hands as Francis rekindles love for Christ, not only in John's heart, but in the hearts of all the people of Greccio. And of course, this really led to the popular devotion of having nativity scenes in each of our homes and in our churches as a reminder of the great celebration of Christmas, our God becoming an infant to dwell among us. My name is Father Rick Martinetti, a Franciscan priest with the Order of Friars Minor, and I want to thank you for taking this time to listen with me and to reflect on the writings of Saint Bonaventure. And let's continue to ask his prayer and his intercession that what we hear may truly have an effect in our lives, that it may sink deeply into our hearts and lead us to a life of greater love for our Lord Jesus Christ. And may God give you peace.